Welcome to Drilling Deep. I'm your host, John Kingston. I always start the podcast by noting that we talk about oil here on Drilling Deep, and because you need to drill for oil to get it, and that's where we got its name. But then I also talk about our guest of the week, which is usually has something to do with logistics. Not this week. This week, it's all oil. Specifically, we're going to be speaking to John Hours. He has been following oil product markets for a long time. I've known John for many years. His company, RBN Energy, just came out with a new report on the future of fuels, and that means diesel, among other things. He'll be by in a few minutes. One of the big news stories in fuels in the past few weeks was the announcement that oil giant BP was going to acquire truck stop giant Travel Centers of America. I was shocked at this at first because oil companies have been getting out of the retail business, not plunging in. Yes, they do have stations that carry their brand name, but those stations aren't owned by the oil companies. They fly the banner of an Exxon or Chevron under a contractual agreement with the owner, which might be an individual, or it might be a small company, or even a larger company that owns lots of stations. But if I was a little bit more up to speed on what BP has said as its long-term strategy, then maybe I wouldn't have been so shocked. But the reality is that one of the five pillars of BP's growth that they've laid out is something called convenience. So you can see where TA would fit in with that. Not only that, but there are pillars that have to do with the energy transition, and that means different types of transport fuels, like battery vehicles, or maybe someday fueling trucks with hydrogen. Owning one of the biggest truck stops chains in America could obviously contribute to meeting that goal. But on a personal note, I'm going to miss the quarterly earnings report of TA. I liked it because they put a figure in there on gross fuel margins. It was a figure in cents per gallon, and it showed how much money TA was making on the sale of a gallon of fuel. Now, they did not break it down between diesel and gasoline, but TA did break out its sales figures on each of the two products, and it was always around 88 to 89% diesel. But that meant that the gross fuel margin was always going to be mostly a diesel margin. I'm not sure when the BP acquisition of TA is going to close, which means that the fourth quarter report that just came out might be the last one or the next to last one if they get the deal closed quickly. But what this one showed, what this last report showed, is that for the last few quarters, and the fourth quarter in particular, selling diesel has been a really good business. Note that for big convenience stores and truck stops, selling fuel was always sort of a necessary evil to get drivers to come into the stores and buy other things, or in the case of big truck stops, utilize other services. But during the craziness of the pandemic, when oil prices went up and down with tremendous volatility, it means that retail prices' normal relationships to wholesale prices were way out of whack. It may look suspicious if you're a driver and filling up at the pump that retailers kept their prices high for as long as they could when overall futures and wholesale numbers were falling. But that doesn't explain why TA reporting gross fuel margins of more than 29 cents in the quarter is so far above where it traditionally has been in recent years pre-pandemic, which is more like either side of 15 cents. If all they had to do was hang on to high prices when the market was falling, those margins could have approached 30 cents in many other quarters, but they didn't. Let's also point out that I have no reason to believe that TA is an outlier. Its experience is probably the same as pretty much everybody else. So what happened in the fourth quarter that fuel margins were so high? The simple answer is that retailers were slow to chase down the falling price of wholesale diesel, which in turn was coming down hard on the back of declines in the futures market. But more than that, retailers just do not have a business plan that calls upon them changing fuel prices up or down all that rapidly. It is just not in their DNA to drop a price 10 cents in a day if the wholesale number declined that much, especially if in a volatile market, it might pop right back up by another 10 cents a day later. And to drive home the point that this was not just a TA thing, let's look at the fuels.usa data series from Sonar. It is a simple spread between the average daily retail diesel price and the average daily wholesale diesel price. This is a chart that goes back 5 years. As you can see, for several years, that spread was reasonably steady at about $1.10 per gallon, though at the start of the pandemic, it did rise as retail prices did not fall as fast as the broader oil market, which is in rapid retreat. It then held reasonably steady through 2021 before going berserk in 2022, as you can see. We had huge periods of the markets going way up and then going down and then up and then down. And retailers were just not set up to change their prices that fast. The end result is that they made a lot of money on fuels in the fourth quarter, even though their business plan mostly is to make money in the convenience store, not at the pump. Things will get back to normal and probably already have started. The Fuels.USA data series has been on the decline as we return to some form of normalcy. Unfortunately, we're not going to get the specificity that we had every quarter in the TA earnings. I'm going to miss that. Time to move on, but actually today we're going to stay on message. We talked about oil, of course, to kick off the show, and now we're going to continue to talk about oil. Specifically, we're going to talk about refined products. You know, there are lots of oil and gas reports out there, but I was very happy to receive an email recently from RBN Energy, where I know several people who work there, former colleagues, and I was glad to see that the advisory firm has created a new fuels report for the year. And the man at the head of that effort is somebody I've known for many years. He is John Hours, long recognized as one of the leading experts on the structure of particularly product markets, crude as well. And he, for many years, was with the firm of Turner Mason and Company. Right now, he's over at RBN and as a managing director. And John, first of all, welcome to Drilling Deep. And two, I think you're pretty much in charge of this project, weren't you?
Yeah, myself. I also have a key assistant, my son, Robert, who's a very experienced chemical engineer and has a market and financial background as well in the refining industry. And the two of us really put this report together with assistance from the RBN Energy team. RBN is, as you mentioned, you know, it's a well-known firm. Many of the people listening probably get the blogs, the rock music-centered blogs that we do on a regular basis. RBN has in the past been focused on the upstream, the midstream, the natural gas sector, crude oil as well. And recently, last year, myself and Robert moved over and started the downstream a segment of the business. And we have a sort of a separate, but it's within RBN Energy, refined fuels analytics firm. And I've been doing, in previous work, I've been doing industry forecasts for over 15 years now. And this is our first version under the refined fuels analytics umbrella called Future Fuels. We just issued it last week, so it's really fresh off the press. We were updating it to the last moment. As we know, the market's very volatile. And as many people know that read the blog, you know, RBN is really focused on market analytics. This report is meant to be a really deep dive into the liquid fuels markets. We call it Future Fuels because we include not just petroleum-derived fuels. Obviously, that's the biggest portion of it. We're also looking at biofuels, and as new alternatives become relevant, we're going to continue to do that. This report's going to be a twice-a-year effort to update the market because the market's constantly changing. So, again, thanks for mentioning that. And we can get into some of the highlights of the report as we move through our talk here.
Well, let's take this from the perspective of a truck driver. A truck driver knows that the price of diesel went up. Of course, it's come back down. It's down all but about 19 cents, 18, 19 cents from the gains post-Russian invasion of Ukraine. But there is another thing that they have seen and continue to see, and that is that spread between gasoline and diesel. They don't need big fancy charts and big databases to know that diesel used to be sort of X cents above gasoline, and now it's X plus a lot more than it used to be. And we hear this all the time. Why? Why? I know I have my theories. I'd like to hear yours. And did you take this up in the report?
Yeah, we obviously addressed that. You know, it's a very detailed report. We have a price forecast that's probably more detailed than anything that's out there, you know, covering, you know, all the regions, both within the U.S., multiple regions, and then globally, and then all the different product groups, even subgroups, and including intermediates and all the different commodities that are traded in the marketplace and around the globe. The move for the diesel premium versus gasoline has actually been something that's been happening over years. The last 2 years have particularly accentuated this more demand for the distillate side, less demand on the gasoline side. And a lot of it is related to demand. You know, gasoline has been more impacted by alternatives, certainly ethanol at first, and then now as EVs become more predominant and as they're going to continue to grow and eat into gasoline demand, they're going to make gasoline demand going forward less of a growth product. Even though we still have it growing globally, we believe it's peaked in the U.S. in that when it plateaued in that 2017 and 2019 period. We actually are more bullish on gasoline demand than many others. We don't have it going down precipitously in the U.S., but it will have peaked and will start going down. We have kind of plateauing at this 9 million barrel day level over the next 3 or 4 years and then slowly declining. A diesel, on the other hand, is much... when I talk about diesel, you got to lump jet fuel in there because they really come out of the same pot. It's impossible to electrify planes, and it will be for a long, long time, if ever. Same goes for diesel. You know, obviously, there's a lot of talk of electric trucks. That's not going to be a major competitor for petroleum diesel for a while. On the biofuel side, renewable diesel is growing. But it's certainly not going to reach the levels of penetration in the pool that ethanol has on the gasoline side. So there's that demand factor. The other part of the demand factor is we have growing economies throughout the world. Diesel is the key component. Middle distillates in general are the key component to service growing and developing economies. So we have significant diesel demand long term. We have diesel demand growing globally by 5 million barrels a day over the next 20 years, and jet fuel demand growing by even more, 6 million barrels a day. So that's 11 million barrels a day. Most of that, very little of that's going to be, that's liquid, that's a liquid part of it. So some of that is biofuels, but it's not, RD and SAF are going to be a relative minor portion of that growth. Now, in the short term, what we've seen in the last 2 years has been a perfect storm. We had, when the COVID lockdowns came into play, significant refining capacity was shut down, over 3 million barrels a day. Our number is 3.4 million globally, 1.4 in North America. There were some additions too. So net capacity, kind of stayed flat, but essentially lost capacity gains for 3 years. And then demand came back strongly during the 20 to 22 period. We're back up above 2019 levels globally. We're equal to those levels in the U.S. We didn't have the refining capacity to be able to meet that rising demand. So that was a big factor. Then the Russian war took place. Russia's the number two exporter of products in the world. A lot of it's diesel. We were down about 900,000 barrels a day of total exports out of Russia. Probably 400,000 or 500,000 that was diesel. Recently, in advance of the February 5th sanctions, Russian exports did grow back, but now they're going to start declining again post February 5th. And we actually have, if we look out 1 or 2 years, net Russian diesel on the market versus 2019 or versus 2022 pre-war levels, down probably around 600,000 barrels a day. And on top of that, we always forget about IMO. Prior to 2020.
I don't forget about IMO.
Yeah, well, it's
IMO. I was going to ask you.
Making a big impact now. It was delayed because of what happened with the COVID lockdowns. But we estimate that about 700,000 barrels a day of additional diesel is is necessary in the bunker fuel market now versus prior to IMO. So that's a big number. And I'll throw a third one out there that is China. China actually could have serviced some of that diesel shortage. They were running their refinery slack in over the last couple, 3 years, about 70%. But due to CCP policy, they limited exports. And actually, diesel exports out of China were down by about 150 to 200,000 barrels a day from 2019 during 2022. So, and then you have fuel switching. There's several factors. You have, because of the high natural gas price, again, influenced by the Russia-Ukraine war, we probably had between 1 and 400,000 barrels a day of diesel being used for power generation because it was cheaper than using natural gas, especially in Europe. So, perfect storm.
So,
huge margin.
What are your forecasts, though, for that spread between diesel and crude or diesel and gasoline? I know that I was looking at the latest report for a couple months ago from Energy Aspects, which is a well-known consulting firm. And you know, their forecast on the spread was that it was going to hold pretty consistently high. Do you have any forecast on that spread? Do you see it softening at all this year, or maybe getting even wider? I mean, I've tried to make the point to the FreightWaves audience, you know, or drivers and fuel buyers, that you do pay that cost. I mean, if diesel traditionally is, let's say, 20 cents over gasoline, and it, you know, in the futures market, it rises to 50. I'm just pulling numbers out of thin air, but you know, you're going to pay that difference. Where do you see that spread going this year?
Well, you know, let's talk about the crude spread first. I mean, I always look at separate margins, but you know, right now, diesel margins versus crude, let's talk about that part first. You know, they've come down. They've actually come up a little bit over the last week or two, but they had come down, you know, as, you know, we had a warmer winter. There were weather impacts, you know, the increased Russian exports prior to February 5th. Just a lot of factors had that margin coming down. It's bounced back a little. But we have overall diesel margins coming down this year and next year due to a slower economic activity. And a big piece will be the increased, the significant amount of refining capacity that will be coming online and is coming online right now, over the next 12 to 15 months. So we have margins for diesel versus crude now coming down to maybe $15 to $20 a barrel from the $30 a barrel levels they are now. We think they're going to stay in those levels. Now, long term, I said I'm bullish on diesel demand. We think the diesel margins versus crude will stay well above historical levels for the foreseeable future. Our outlook goes out to 2045, actually. And even during that whole period, we have diesel margins versus crude, again, U.S. light crude on the Gulf Coast, $20 to $30 a barrel consistently. Not the levels we saw last year or two, but significantly above, you know, 2019 and before levels. Versus gasoline, it'll continue to maintain significant premiums versus gasoline. We have gasoline demand, again, stagnating and declining in the U.S. and developed economies, growing to some by some levels in globally, but not by a lot. So it's not the levels we saw last year, but sustained premiums versus gasoline for the long term. And refiners, existing refiners over time, even the new refiners that are being added are diesel centric, but that's not enough to compensate for the differentials in demand between gasoline and diesel. So existing refiners will continue to have to invest in moving their slate more towards diesel versus gasoline by adding hydrocracking capacity, more shutdowns of cat crackers, more gas oil going to those hydrocrackers, turning out middle distillates as opposed to turning out gasoline.
Right. Now, ExxonMobil has new capacity coming on in Beaumont. I can't remember, is that crude distillation capacity or is that primarily refined product capacity to make diesel?
Well, it's 250,000 barrels a day of capacity. They're in startup mode right now. It's a big project, so that startup mode will continue for the next couple months. They're probably not going to be up to full rates that they say till at least the end of this month, maybe even into April and even maybe into May. That is crude capacity. They're actually going to be displacing. They were buying gas oil to feed their cat crackers. Now they're going to be supplying that internally. And it's really, the project is at Beaumont, but it's really a Gulf Coast project because there are going to be some, they're going to leverage their Baytown and Baton Rouge facilities as well. So it won't be that much total incremental product, but it will be more product. It does produce more diesel than gasoline, but it is tuned to running light crude. I mean, it basically is going to be running the Permian light barrels that Exxon is producing in their upstream group. So they wanted to have a secure home for that increased production. Chevron's actually increasing their capacity at the Pasadena facility, which they bought from Petrobras, and that its main purpose was to run those barrels from West Texas. That capacity increased only about 15,000 barrels a day next year, and we actually have a net increase in production and primarily diesel focused at the Valero facility when they add their coker this year and actually in the next couple 3 months. So there are some capacity additions in the U.S., but at the end of the year, we're going to have a shutdown of Lyondell, the 290,000 barrel day refinery in Houston. And we're going to have the Phillips Rodeo facility fully shut down in 2024, converted fully to renewable diesel production. So some makeup by in volume from the renewed diesel they're going to produce there.
All right, so let's talk about renewable diesel, because as you mentioned, Rodeo is a full integrated refinery. It's going to close, but what's going to come in its place is a facility that will produce renewable diesel. Renewable diesel, just to recap for our audience, is not like biodiesel that you blend into existing diesel. It is a fully finished product. You can pour it into your truck tank and it will run the truck just fine. Might even run it better, some people might say, in terms of wear and tear on the engine. The renewable diesel figures that are being added throughout the country are pretty impressive, John, but they're not compensating for the loss of refining capacity. If you lose a 250,000 barrel a day refinery, there aren't any renewable diesel facilities that are going to be built that are going to compensate for, if you assume, let's say, a third of a 250K refinery is, let's say, around 80,000 barrels a day. These new renewable diesel facilities are not 80,000 barrels a day. They are much smaller than that. So the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, but I think it's mostly more taketh away. Wouldn't you agree?
No, absolutely. Just to put numbers on it, back in 2020, we had about 50,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel capacity in the U.S. We'll have over 400,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel capacity by 2025. When some of these other projects come up, we're at, I think the numbers are about two, we're at 200, just about 200,000 barrels a day now. And so anyway, that's a big increase. But again, a lot of that came, there's some greenfield facilities there, but a lot of it came from conversions like Rodeo and the Marathon facility in the Bay Area as well, which will be starting up next year, or actually later. The Marathon starts up this year, I think. And so there's a lot of renewable diesel coming online. But one of the things is, I'll talk about renewable diesel a little bit. We were a net importer of renewable diesel until last year. We're now pretty even, but we're actually adding more capacity than there is demand for renewable diesel in the U.S. So we're going to move to become an exporter of renewable diesel this year and become a bigger exporter as we move into 24 and 25 as some of that capacity comes online. SAF can also be produced at the same facilities, and as incentives for SAF grow, there's going to be more of that. In the short term, we're going to be an importer of SAF because we just had that new blender tax credit that came, $1.75 blender tax credit came online for SAF. And so we'll be an importer for the next 2 years, but then we're going to switch to be an exporter of that material as well. So we're not only going to be exporting petroleum products, but also biofuels as we move forward. And it makes sense because we're advantaged in a lot of those areas, both on the petroleum side and the biofuel side. So, but one thing I'll mention on renewable diesel, even as we increase renewable diesel in the market, it actually adds to the cost of diesel. It's a more expensive product. You don't, by adding renewable diesel production, usually when you add supply, you decrease prices. Well, we're adding more expensive supply, essentially mandated expensive supply. And it's not subsidized by the government. It's actually subsidized by consumers. The RFS program is a program that the government doesn't pay for it all through their revenue, through their input of dollars. It's paid for by the consumers and the cost at the pump through RINs. RINs basically are passed through to the consumers, and they subsidize these higher cost barrels in the transportation fuel markets. So the more renewable diesel mandates you put in place, actually, the higher the cost of diesel at the pump.
Let's do a couple of definitions. SAF is sustainable aviation fuel, correct?
Sustainable aviation fuel. Sorry, I didn't define
that. Right. And RFS would be the renewable fuel standard, which requires a certain amount of renewable fuels to be consumed. Well, I just want to go to one point because this went pretty fast. We're running out of time. You say we have excess demand. We don't have adequate demand for all the renewable diesel that's out there. and we'd export it. I mean, it would seem to me that given the credits and the advantages that renewable diesel has in the U.S., that would be kind of like one of the first barrels consumed, unless maybe the credits are so good in California that's where it needs to get consumed and it kind of runs out of runway there. I'm just surprised that renewable diesel barrels aren't like one of the first barrels consumed.
It's extremely expensive. The subsidy, essentially, the effect of subsidy on renewable diesel is very high, and even California is realizing that. So more and more LCFS credits in California are being generated by electricity and biomethane and other parts, because the renewable diesel is a lot more expensive to generate those LCFS credits. So it's becoming a less attractive way of meeting LCFS standards in California. There's still some growth in demand, but it won't be like it has been. And so, and it's one reason why we don't see more capacity being added in the U.S. post 25 or 6, because the demand for renewable diesel will flatline. Because, again, it's a very expensive product, and there's better ways of meeting these low carbon fuel standards and the RFS standards than through renewable diesel production.
That's interesting, because I think the kind of a general consensus or general idea was that renewable diesel supplies were so advantaged in the tax system, or in particular state systems like California, that the supply was just going to go on up for a long time to come. But you're seeing it kind of petering out then.
Petering out because of the demand side. You know, it's just too expensive. Feedstocks, ultimately the incremental feedstock is an imported soybean oil, which is very expensive. And so producing, if we didn't have these mandates, there would be no renewable diesel produced. It's purely a mandated and policy incentivized product. And ultimately, the policymakers realize that there's other ways to meet these low carbon fuel goals less expensively and more efficiently through other means. Now, other entities, Europe and Canada just started their LCFS program. British Columbia has one. So some of these imports, most of our exports are going to move to those markets, to Canada and to Europe, because of the advantages that we have in producing renewable diesel here versus them. But the demand in the U.S. is going to be relatively stagnant for those. Again, one reason why we're kind of bullish on the petroleum side of the business, we think petroleum fuels and middle distance in particular are going to be the major source of meeting demand for those barrels, for those middle distillate diesel and jet fuel barrels.
Well, we have only touched on the surface, I'm sure, of what's in your fuels report put out by RBM, but we do want to thank John Hours for joining us today. John, any place they can go to see that report? I assume they probably have to buy it, but is there an excerpt on the RBM page?
Yeah. There's on the RBN page, you can go right to the report section and see the report. I'd be happy to talk to anybody about it. It's extremely detailed. Obviously, we can't cover anything anywhere near the features of it on this call. But I think we are out of the mainstream on a few views, getting more bullish on petroleum side of the business. We have some maybe outlying views, as you pointed out, on the renewable diesel side, where we're headed there, and also on some of the other areas. So, again, I'd be happy to talk to anybody, provide more information and more details on our views on the markets.
Okay, John. John Hours again from RBN Energy. Thanks for joining us today on Drilling Deep.
Thank you, John.
You have been watching Drilling Deep, or you have been listening to Drilling Deep, one of the two. We are part of the FreightCast family of podcasts from FreightWaves. You can find us on FreightWaves TV. You can also find us on all the leading podcast platforms. I've been your host, John Kingston, and please join us again.